Please note that this podcast contains information regarding sensitive events, including domestic violence, assault, and abuse, as well as other triggering events such as murder. This podcast is intended for mature audiences. When Alice jumped down the rabbit hole, she immediately regretted her decision. A rabbit hole is a metaphor for something that transports someone into a troubling, surreal state or situation. Welcome to Afterglow, the unveiling of the Idaho cult. Season 1, Episode 8, Lori Vallow shows her true colors. This podcast will take you down the deepest of rabbit holes as it unfolds. The story is so compelling, so bizarre, and so heinous, it's impossible to look the other way. Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow were dedicated in the most horrible way to an ideology that should only be fiction. Instead, their ideology put them behind bars. Join us as we explore the lives, lies, and diabolical crimes of Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell. I'm your host, Kathy Brooks. Please follow and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Hi, and welcome back. If you're new and you're starting at this episode, you really want to go back to season 1, episode 1, and learn the entire background of the story. This story has so many, like I said, rabbit holes. It's impossible to follow, even when you're following it in chronological order. It's really difficult. So last time we talked about Charles Vallow and his murder. He was shot by Lori Vallow's brother, allegedly, Alex Cox. I have some skepticism on if Alex actually was the only shooter or if Lori helped. In my opinion, odds are she helped. We learned later on that some of the bullets were actually the angle they were in were shot when Charles was laying down. And it's very clear when you listen to all the interviews that it was not self-defense. But in the aftermath, Lori and Alex and Tylee were questioned and sent home. Kay and Larry, the Woodcocks, Charles's sister, JJ's grandmother and step-grandfather, they were just blown away and they could not understand what was going. They made a trip to Phoenix, Chandler, Arizona, reached out to Detective Moffitt. What was Lori doing after Charles was shot? We talked about the fact that she had a pool party. The landlord confirmed this, that owned the house. He also asked her to move out. But in the meantime, Lori was busy being Lori. And it's interesting because I read some of the reviews and they were like, you know, I'm sure this Lori did some horrible things, but the podcaster seems to think we all know the story. I am not leaving it a secret. From the very beginning, I told you this is the most heinous crimes, the lives, lies, and diabolical crimes of Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell. And I wasn't kidding. They truly are evil and diabolical. And they were sucked in to a fringe LDS belief system like no other. So in the meantime, while Lori thought she was going to be the queen of the 144,000, and yes, I am sarcastic and I will be sarcastic through this. So if you don't understand sarcasm or if you don't get sarcasm or you don't like sarcasm, you probably don't want to listen. But you have to be with this case. I mean, it's unbelievable the things these people believed and what they did because of these beliefs. It's literally unbelievable. We haven't even gotten to Chad yet. On Friday, July 12th, so well over a day after Charles was shot, Lori decided to go ahead and text his two sons. Text them, not call them, text them. Didn't call right after she was shot, had her pool party, and then the next day she thought, I better let his kids know. Friday, July 12th at 4:36 p.m., 2019, Lori texts them. Hi, boys. I have very sad news. Your dad passed away yesterday. I'm working on making arrangements, and I'll keep you informed with what's going on. I'm still not sure how to handle things. Just want you to know that I love you and so did your dad. Heart emoji there. Then somehow Lori added Lori to the conversation. So she somehow added her other phone. They were known to have several phones, burner phones. My guess is she added a phone, called it Lori, but it was probably Chad or one of her friends, Melanie Gibb, or her niece. So at 4:36 p.m., Lori removed Lolo from the conversation. So I don't know what she's doing with that, but whatever. That's besides the point, really, truly. One of the boys responded, Lori, what happened? Where is he and what happened? Lori says, I'll call you when I can, bub. He is here in Arizona. The reply from the son was, where in Arizona? When did this all happen? How's JJ doing? What funeral home is he at? So he sent these several messages. Boom, boom, boom. They're waiting for an answer, and clearly Lori doesn't answer them. So a couple hours later at 6:54 p.m., one of the boys says, Lori, what the blank happened? You can't just tell us our dad died and disappear. You're not too busy to just let us know he died and disappear. Again, long wait. Friday, July 12th at 8:20 p.m. Again, one of the sons says, Lori, it's been 3 hours. You're not that busy. I don't care what you're doing. Lori finally replies and she says, I'm sorry you are so upset. I'm upset too. I'm trying to get JJ ready for bed. I'm waiting to hear back from the medical examiner to make sense out of all of this myself. Please be patient with me. It's a crushing situation all the way around. I'm still trying to process it too and what it means for JJ. Answer again from one of the sons. When and where is the funeral? How did this all happen? I want an explanation. No answer. Saturday, July 13th, 5:07 p.m. One of the sons sends a question mark. Nothing. Again at 7:03 p.m., another question mark from one of the sons. Lori replies, I'm still waiting, working on arrangements and sorting through things the best I can. I'll let you know when I know. Reply again from one of the sons is, why aren't you telling me what happened? I've asked numerous times. Just tell me. No answer. Question mark again from one of the sons. Now it's Sunday, July 14th at 11:04 a.m. One of the sons sends a question mark again. I mean, oh, I'll just keep going. Nothing. Monday, July 15th at 11:53 a.m. Okay, Lori, it's been 3 days. You let us know that our father passed away over a text message. 3 days, and we haven't heard from anyone. The only information we have is that one text from you saying he passed away. You disappeared after that. We need any information you have. What happened? When did it happen? How did it happen? Where is he now? Are there any funeral plans? And can blank and I be part of it? We talk to him all the time. Initially, when Charles's sons were interviewed, they didn't release their real names, and there was an article calling one of them Steve. I do know that one of them's name is Nicholas. That did come to light eventually, and I'll have to remember what the other son's name is, but it really doesn't matter. He does have two older sons, and this is who's involved in this conversation. Are there any funeral plans, and can blank and I be part of it? We talked to him all the time, and now he's gone. He was our dad, and we loved him very much. We deserve answers. Also, why have you been the only one to contact us? We haven't heard from Colby or Tylee. Colby, remember, is Lori's other child, her oldest child, her son. I know they are affected too. I called Colby recently too, but he didn't answer. Is JJ safe, and what does he know? I need to be kept in the loop about this all. This isn't a nonchalant topic you can just throw a text at and be done with it. Lori replies, these are your dad's wishes. He and I discussed this a lot over the years we have been together. My plan is to have him cremated as he wished and then take all five of you kids to Hawaii to spread his ashes. He did not want a funeral. He wants a celebration of his life. I've been overwhelmed, but I am going to try to start these arrangements today. JJ is doing good, but he does not know his daddy is gone. It's so tough because he doesn't really understand. He says, Daddy is in California working. I know how much he loves you boys and always has. I have a lot of things to do with the business and contacting people, and it's still so difficult. Today, I'm trying to put up a memorial page on the funeral home website. I'll send you the link when I have it. I love you, and so does your dad. Tuesday, July 16th at 4:16 p.m. I appreciate this information, but I will ask these questions again because I still haven't been given an answer. What happened? When did it happen? How did it happen? Where is he now? Is there a funeral? When is it? Who have you told about his death? Give me all the information you have, please. My brother and I deserve to know. Then another message. Not until Saturday, July 20th at 5:21 p.m., the son reaches out to Lori. Well, if you won't answer those questions, can we please have his watches and other stuff he always talked about and had around? Saturday at 6:27, July 20th, Lori replies, Of course, blank. Send me the address you want me to send your stuff to. Kay is supposed to clean out the Houston house. I told her to let you and blank have whatever you want first. Then she could give the have or give away the rest. There's a weird sentence there. It's not make sense, but that's how she typed it. So I'll read that again. I told her to let you and blank have whatever you want first. Then she could give the have or give away the rest. I know he wanted you to have all that you want. Unfreaking believable, right? Unbelievable. So everybody's confused. Kay and Larry are like, what the heck happened? Charles's grown sons are like, what the heck happened? JJ apparently doesn't know that his dad's dead, even though it was shot that day. But JJ is special needs, autistic child. So a lot of it isn't comprehensible, I'm sure, to him. Around the same time, Chad and Lori are clearly in very close communications. And later on, there is an indictment. And according to that, there was text messages between Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell describing how Tammy Daybell, Chad's wife, was in limbo and was possessed by a spirit named Viola. Think back, they were calling Charles a zombie and they gave him the name of Ned Snyder. And now they're saying that Tammy, Chad's wife, is Viola. Her body is possessed by an evil spirit named Viola. So sort of looking similar, right? Charles had to be killed because he was possessed by Ned Snyder. And now they're saying the same thing about Tammy. And around that same time, Lori changes the banking information related to Tylee Ryan's Social Security benefits so that any proceeds would be deposited into Lori's bank account instead of her daughter's. Now remember, Tylee's bio dad, Joe Ryan, had passed away. So assuming Tylee was getting the Social Security benefits that a minor child would get when their parent has passed away. So Lori changed all that into her bank account. That's right at the end of July 2019, just weeks after Charles was shot. Also, during that time, the landlord winds up being interviewed by the Chandler Police Department over the phone, and he has a lot to say. So I'm going to start the interview between Detective Moffitt, Chandler PD, and Joe Pongrantz, who was Charles's good friend and landlord of the property where Charles was shot at.
January 9th, 2020 at 12:06 hours, Detective Moffitt calling case number 19-83744.
Hello, this is Joe.
Hey, Joe, Detective Moffitt with the Chandler Police Department. How are you, sir?
I'm fantastic. How are you today?
I'm well. Sorry, I called you, left a couple messages. I think it was actually Christmas Eve, but and then never heard back from you. And it's been on my list to call you back again.
Sir, I completely understand. The 23rd, I disconnected. I think I was the vacation, and then we went up to the mountains for 10, 14 days, and I had no Wi-Fi calling and bad reception. So who knows what happened. So
that's a great 10, 14 days.
Yeah. You know, there's been a lot of activity in the case the last, since even December, all through December.
Oh, yeah.
But just getting hounded by social media and the Fox News reports guys, and I'm just not interested. I'm not interested in being on that social side of, I mean, there were a few comments that I had made about how great of a guy Charles was, and that I didn't think any of this happened because I knew him before, during, and I knew events about what was happening at the house after. You might not remember, I'm, of course, the owner of the house on Four Peaks, right? Yeah. You know that, right? Okay. Okay, I think I spoke with you the morning of the shooting.
You probably did, yeah, because I think okay. We spoke that day.
Okay. Yeah, because I called the Chandler Police Department. They said, yes, our police officers are on site. There's a situation. I will have them call you. I identified myself as the owner. You called me, verified who lives there, and you had just said Charles sustained injuries that were not survivable, and you know that you were on the scene trying to figure out what had happened. So, so I thought that I would be hearing from you within, I don't know, a few days or something like that. I just let it, you know, I think it's just been the process of then letting the news reports, like, or at least the police officers do their work. My best friend in, you know, since he's in high school, his name, he lives across the street from me down in Chandler.
Gotcha.
And he's been talking me through understanding that this stuff doesn't happen overnight. You don't solve this case overnight. It's going to take a long time. So just let the police do their work. Don't be part of social things. Don't go on news reports because that just creates problems for people that do that.
Yeah.
They're questioned, they're ridiculed, they're this, they're that. Early on, I wrote down a piece of paper, detailed events that were happening before the weekend I spoke with Charles, the weekend before, I think he was murdered. I think it was on a Wednesday or Thursday morning. Thursday morning. Okay. I was speaking with Charles on the phone, a live conversation during the weekend before. And he was on his business trip. He said he was coming into town. I think he was coming from Texas. He said he's coming back into town. And he said, Joe, you know, you didn't know Charles, but he had a Texas, Louisiana swing accent. So every time I talk in Charles's voice, I always have to add that, hey, Joe, I can't stay at the house. Lori and I just are getting along. And he didn't tell me he was scared for his life, but he says, it's best that Lori and JJ have the house and I'll just come and go because I've got business in so many different places in Texas. And I think it was in Nevada and California. He was an investment guy. So his partnership and they would buy books of investment business. And then he would go and start setting up, working the books of business. Well, he was really busy during this time. He was just at three cities that he was bringing on new books of business. So he's like, I'm going to tell you, I'm probably going to be there a week, a month. So, you know, it's good that Lori and JJ are here because her family's here and I want her to be safe and I want them to be taken care of. And, you know, with Lori's family here, it's a good thing. Now, I also might tell you that going back to January, when Lori disappeared in the first conversations, Charles came to my house. Crying his eyes out. He was a 60-year-old stud, good friend of mine for 10 years, crying his eyes out to me that Lori's abandoned the family. And here's JJ asking every day where mommy is. Where's mommy? Where's mommy? Tell me a little bit about the stuff that she was getting into with just being mentally unstable, as has also been supported by a lot of the divorce decree, the attorneys brought up the last week as well. Like with all these things that Charles was saying about Lori, he was fearful of his life even back in February. Well, he was doing the same thing to me. I support that. I know that that's exactly what how he was feeling. February-ish, he came and he was looking to rent the studio above my garage at my house in Chandler. I said, "Gosh, Charles, it's just kind of like and he's like, "But I don't know if I'm going to need it." But we were talking about it, but then all of a sudden he disappeared. And I think that was maybe the time frame. Of course, March, April, May, maybe Lori returned. Lori returned sometime in his life, right? They started trying to work out.
They reunited back in Texas.
Yeah, back to Texas. So, and then June was another call from him to say, "We're moving back to Phoenix. Do you have anything?" And I said, "Gosh, Charles, I just cleared out the end of May. I just had a tenant move out of that Four Peaks house. Four Peaks is open." So they arrived the middle of June. I think the 20th was when Lori texted me that she had the utilities turned on and she wanted to move stuff in. I know that I had some cleaning to do. I went over there a few times and met with Lori about a punch list to clean the house up and, fix the sink, that the door handle, that pull this, the pull that. And, they moved in, she moved in, then Charles would come and go because he was, of course, on these business trips. One time I was at the house and I met with Charles and Lori through a punch list on what needed to be done. And then Charles would go on his trip again. But then, so you have some history, at least from last year. But then on that Sunday or Monday before he came back into town, the Thursday before he was shot, Charles and I were communicating and he was telling me, "I can't be at the house. Do you have another place that I can live?" Well, by that time I had someone that was living in my studio apartment at my house because Charles was like, "I only need it for like a week, a month, maybe a few days because I'll be coming and going, but I want to be close to Lori and JJ because I want to be patient." And he goes, "But Joe, I can't stay at the house. I can't stay at the house. Lori and I, we've got several things to work through still and it's not good. And I just don't want to crowd that space. If she's going to be there, I want her and JJ to be comfortable at the house." So I have a neighbor that lives right across our walls connect. Big house in right near my house off of Lindsay and Riggs. So I went over there. I called him. I said, "Hey, you've got a casita. I've got a business guy that's here going to be here once a month, 1 week a month." And I took pictures. And this guy, he lived in Hawaii at the time. And he said, "Yeah, here's the access code to my house." I went over there, took pictures of the casita. I sent them to Charles, say, "Hey, Charles, my friend, my neighbor here has this place. He'd be willing to let you stay there." And Charles was like, "Fantastic. I'll take it." So he was already planning to not be at the house with Lori because it just wasn't good.
When was he planning that? The condo or the thing from your neighbor's house?
It was that Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I had gone over to my neighbor's house to take pictures. The week he was killed.
Okay, gotcha.
I texted him those pictures Monday or Tuesday. It's in my phone. And then, of course, he was telling me the day before on Wednesday, "Okay, I'll be there. But in the morning, let's go see the house tomorrow morning." And that was Thursday. He goes, I knew that he was going to be dropping off JJ or getting JJ. And then he wanted to go see the house right after that.
Gotcha.
Of course, we didn't meet. So I'm at work Thursday morning and my neighbors, I'm good friends with neighbors both to the north and to the south of that house on Four Peaks. And they both have my phone number. I'm in communication with both of them. Well, one of them starts to text me immediately. There's yellow police tape around the house. It's a crime scene. Something's not good. They start sending me videos of the Fox News reports that there's a situation and there's police all over. And so I immediately text Charles, "Are you okay?" And I then another text message to Lori, same text message, "Are you okay?" ?
Yeah.
Where Charles doesn't respond. Later that morning, I would say 11 o'clock-ish, I get a text, and this is all on my phone, I get a text back from Lori that says, "We are all okay. I'll call and explain later. And I'm like, okay, well, like, I don't even know that I spoke to you at that point because I remember when you called me, you told me that Charles sustained injuries that were not survivable. like he was shot and he didn't survive his injuries.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I knew that yet, or if I just, you know, Lori was telling me we're all okay. I'll explain later. Like, I don't know that a text message that we're all okay is like, I just don't understand. Like, but regardless, the day's events, like, so then, like, that afternoon, I think the next day I went to my neighbor's house, this neighbor's to the south, and they're like telling me, Joe, like, we don't even get what's going on there, because this guy, the shooter, because they've seen him come and go, had the same gray truck that Charles had, the Ford F-150.
Yeah, his was white, but yeah.
Yeah, well, it was sitting in the driveway for like the next 3, 4, 5 days, and the neighbors were just up in arms, like, there is a killer living in the house next to us that's not supposed to be there. Joe, you got to get this guy out of here. Like, our whole neighborhood is on eggshells. So, and he's telling me, I don't know what's going on at the house, but Thursday afternoon, the day of the murder, they're having a pool party at the house, at Lori's house. There's loud music. There's lots of people. There's kids making noise. They're swimming. It's a pool party. And they're like, wait a second. Like, someone was just murdered there this morning. So I don't know how you guys puzzle these pieces together, but just how crazy the events are that had happened before, supporting all the stuff that's coming out in the last several months about the fact that, yeah, from February, Charles was fearful. And then the day before, showing him an apartment and a better place to live because he knew he couldn't stay at the house. Alex had been at the house for several days before and after the shooter, Alex, her brother.
Yeah.
And, you know, the reasons I had, you know, part of this right at the beginning was like, oh, Lori, maybe Charles had a rough side. Maybe Charles was, was beating up Lori and her brother was there to defend her or whatever. And maybe I was like, gosh, I've known the guy for 10 years, but I've never known that he was like that ever in my life. People sometimes have a separate personality, you know? So early on, I think people were like, oh, you know, poor Lori, you know, like, she had to deal with this for so long. And, you know, Alex was just happened to be there and, you know, shot through or whatever. But I think all the events that just kept going, like, every time I talked to Lori, never cried, never remorseful, never like, you know, Lori, you know, what's the plan for the burial? Well, I've got all these family members to deal with. So I've got to go to Texas and Louisiana and plan something there. And Charles wants to be buried he wanted his ashes to be spread in Kauai. So I've got to plan a trip to take all the family members to Kauai. And this is what she was doing. She's like, so I've got 2 or 3 things to plan. So I'm like, okay, well, I'll give you a month at the end of August. You just need to, you're going to have to vacate the house. I can't have this continue to be a memory for me. Charles is my friend. You're my friend, but I just need to close my doors on this house and just get it out of, I have a lot of rental properties in Chandler. So I'm like, this house just needs to be off my list.
Yeah.
So that's why she was able to stay there through the end of August. But, you know, I think that, you know, she kept asking, well, come over. I want to ask you about a few things. I'm like, no, I am not going over to that house. You know, my friend Jeff, who's the police officer, don't go there alone. Don't go anywhere. Go somewhere public if she wants to talk about the situation. I just think, you know, and I don't know what pieces of any of this. I mean, I've been called by the Vallow family because they knew some of the relatives of Charles's that were able to access his calendar and his appointment scheduler for the last several years. Charles was very, very meticulous and precise about his appointments. And my name was on those appointments several times. So one of the family members was even telling me, yeah, Joe, you know, like, we saw your name. You're the only person, like, we're talking to FBI and law enforcement, and, you know, we'll talk to Charles's friends that we can identify because we know who they are in his calendar and his scheduler and his notes.
Yeah.
But they were just telling me about how deep this cult is, that they've been getting threats in Louisiana and that they've just been off any social communication or any providing any comments about all the social crap that's going on, because it is so, there's so much speculation out there. I just also, you know, my wife and I, of course, we own the house. We have plans to do things with the house, but we have some we're religious. We have certain things that we want to kind of ask if there's an opportunity to have any information about the events that happened in our house.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, like, I'm just like, if do you have any questions for me about Lori? Do you have any questions about the neighbors, the comments, the pictures, the text message threads from Charles?
I actually have text message threads with you and Charles, because I have Charles's phone.
Okay,
so
got it.
So I downloaded it, so I have that. You know, the pool party was something that was new to me. I didn't know that. And Kay, Charles's sister, hadn't told me that. So you got that information from the neighbors that on either side of them that there was a pool party, or did you go to the house that day?
Yes. No. I the neighbors on the south side of me. Of course, the neighbors were in communication with me the whole time during the day and afterwards because they were scared. They were. There's a murderer at the house. The house is there. I see the guy come and go, driving his car. So I had gone over there, and they had said, why was there a pool party there? And I'm like, well, you need loud music, swimming, lots of people swimming in the backyard. You could hear kids playing, swimming. I'm like, I don't know. And all I could think was, maybe she was trying to return a normal seat for JJ, an autistic kid. You know, if you keep these autistic kids on a schedule and a routine, that they have some normalcy, maybe.
Yeah,
and maybe the fact that he was used to swimming every day in the afternoon with Lori's sister, who would drive up from wherever she lived in Gilbert, Santana Mesa. She didn't live too far away, but she drove to the house. I saw her there with her family and her kids several times. And I'm like, well, maybe Lori just had the family over to try to give JJ some normalcy because it was a crazy day for him, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't know. But, you know, I hear things like, you know, the shooting happened and Lori then left the house to take the kids to school or different places. And then they came back. She came back and then they called 911. Right, like planning all the events. Like,
that's not actually what happened. Lori left to, according to her, to take JJ to school, and then Alex called 911 while she was gone, and we were already on scene by the time Lori got back.
Got it. Yeah.
So, I do believe there was some delay on Alex's part of calling 911. I don't think he called right away. But the 911 had been called and we were already on scene by the time Lori got back.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm not a person to say the speculation of they were planning the crime scene. They were doing this. You guys, how the story unfolds, how everything, I mean, you hear things, you'll get Lori back for more questioning. You know, Alex's murder is another whole twist in the complete circus of a story. But like, here's, you know, and I also, so here's my thing about it. I was crazy about the fact that here's my friend Charles, which was a sweet, generous family man. Like, we were so good friends. Charles and Lori had rented a house from me years when they first moved here from Texas. They lived in Shadow Ridge, which is like at Lindsay and Riggs. It's another home where we have a rental house. Charles and Lori rented a house for me from there like for 5 years when they both moved here from Texas.
Okay.
Years and years ago. So for 5 years, Charles and I were like across the street from each other. He'd come over, I'd go over. And even when they left to move to Hawaii, he left all his furniture, all his TVs, almost like was going to give me a car and just say, Joe, here, just take it because we were moving and you can, you know, keep it at the house, use it as a rental or whatever. That's how generous like Charles was like with things. It wasn't like he was like, pay me $5,000 and you can have this stuff. He's like, here, just have it. Right. Wow. Well, years later, Charles and I are maintaining friendships while they're in Hawaii and we're here and we're talking about doing a house swap. Hey, Charles, you come here with your family, stay in Chandler so you can visit your Chandler family with Lori, and I'll go to Hawaii and stay in your house in Princeville. And we were, you know, for two summers, we were trying to set that up. Then finally, one year, we went there.
Yeah.
We went to Princeville, and we had a barbecue with the Vallows, J.J. Tiley, Lori, Charles, at their house in the golf course. Charles, you know, just carrying my daughter, like they live on the top of this house, and the beach was on this really steep hill to go down a hill. And he would carry my kids down the hill. Just like this guy that has everything about family and just being generous and everything. So of course, when they came back, I was the first person that he was looking to get a house to rent, you know? So that was the communication that you were seeing with Charles and I, where even 7:49 the night before he was shot, his last text message to me, okay, I'll see you tomorrow morning. I'll call you when I'm done. And I guess my assumption was that was like after I dropped JJ off at school, I'll be back and we'll go look at that house to rent. Not too many people knew about the fact that, of course, I went to my neighbor's house and they're telling me these things and, you know, the pool party and, you know, the things that were happening. And then Alex still being at the house several days before and several days after this happened.
Quickly interrupting here, you notice he said Alex was there several days before and after. So again, a huge inconsistency in what everybody has said. Alex came over the night before. Summer said we don't even know that part yet, about Summer saying she sent him. Alex was there several days before, according to the neighbors. Important.
In the house, you know, like I don't want to do any, I don't want to, you know, if a homeowner has the right to, like, you know, there's no police report out on what happened other than what you guys released to the news. And I think that's what's out, right? I don't know if there's more. I don't know if I have the ability to go to records to Chandler and say, it's my house. Do I have the ability to receive any additional information so I can either clean the house where it needs to be cleaned, or if I can, you know, do some type of closing so that I can, you know, be able to go into the house. I don't know where the things happened. I don't know where his body was. I don't know, you know, where the gunshots were, if I need to look for, you know, other gunshot damage anywhere.
Since we finished up in July?
I've been there several times. Okay. I've been there several times because I have the house for sale.
Gotcha.
And it's just taken me a while to, I wanted to paint the house. I wanted to paint the outside. I wanted to redo the backyard just because I've been getting the house ready for sale. I have a contract on the house. We're due to close the end of January. Yeah. Like literally like 2 or 3 weeks. So, but you know, of course that was the reason that I didn't want the house in the first place, because I don't want to go there. It's just a terrible feeling even being in the neighborhood. So, but you know, I think the most important thing that I wanted to communicate with you is that, you know, I had communicated with the Vallo family, and they had told me some things about what they were privileged to because, you know, their brother, father, uncle, you know, person died. Charles died in the house, and they were, you know, looking for some answers. I kind of don't want to know about any more things that happened in the house, but I just want to know that if there's any more information that you might have or need from me, like even the text message threads from Lori that we were talking about through the days before and after, you know, like the days after where I'm like, whose red SUV is that? Whose gray truck is that? She's like, oh, the red SUV was Charles's rental car. And the truck is her brother's, and it's still out front, still sitting there. The neighbors were sending me pictures of it. Like, why is this truck still here? So, but I don't know if that's anything is useful information other than, you know, just connecting with you and just saying, you know, I'm selling the house. Someone else will be in there. I don't know that you would need any more information there, but certainly.
Because you clearly saw the piece of flooring that we cut out in the living room. Or did Lori already
the piece of flooring that you cut out?
Yeah, we cut out a piece of flooring in the living room.
We actually no idea.
Saws all, and so Lori must have already had that fixed.
Oh, geez. No idea, sir. No idea where that was or when that, because there was extra flooring in the garage.
Okay, so she must have fixed that. And then there, we cut out a piece of the trim board also. That was so on the east wall of the living room. We cut that out also.
So she must. You say the living room. There was family room where the TV was by the kitchen.
The front door, the yes. Big wood floor that was open. I think she had some mirrors on the wall. If you were like when yes. You walk in the front door to the right, and then so yeah. If, when you walk at the front door straight ahead of you, you're looking at the windows that go out to the pool area in the backyard.
Yes, sir. Yes.
So right there, kind of as you walked in the front door, on that far wall underneath the windows, we cut out a piece of trim board too. So I'm guessing she probably had fixed that also. So that isn't something that you.
Okay. Know. There was a very grotesque repair there, like almost like she put some wood there and then took caulking and just made it. And I was like, what the heck is that? I had no idea that happened.
Yeah.
Okay. So that was from Lori replacing things that you guys took out.
That we took out. Yeah. So she must have replaced. It was only it was like a single plank that we cut out, and it was probably, yeah. I'm going to guess, if my memory serves me correctly, 14 to 16 inches long. So she.
I was going to say 12, 15 inches. Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
So okay. She probably replaced that plank. Obviously, the incident happened in the living room. In the living room there. So. Okay. You know, we were there. Everybody's statements when we investigated this added up. You know, there's three people in the house, obviously, according to everybody in the house at the time of the shooting. So their statements all kind of match, but it just didn't sit right with us. So we've been investigating it ever since and had a case open, and we were waiting for DNA and fingerprints on the bat that was inside the house and a bunch of other stuff. And then clearly, everything kind of goes wacky as soon as this, all these other events start unfolding and you know, the shooting in Gilbert and then her new husband's wife dying in Idaho and then the kids being missing. And so everything goes just wacky, basically after she leaves your house in August. Did she move out right at the end of August?
Text message from her says that she's they're out August 31st. They're all done and they're gone. And you know, I had done some emails like, well, you know, good luck to you. And like, where are you going? I asked her because I was, are you going to Texas? And then she never replied after that. So yeah, August 31st was the last day that she was here in our house.
Joe, what's your email address? I'm sending you an email real quick.
Okay.
It has my desk number and stuff on it. And then if you could, from like the day of the incident on, do you know how to screenshot and email the screenshots?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
If not, let me know and we could have somebody do it. But if you know how to screenshot and email the screenshots, I'd be interested for your text communication with Lori basically on the day of the incident until you kind of cut off until your last communication.
Yeah. Okay.
So, and that's just kind of more the historical and, you know, kind of what's going on in her world type thing that I'd be interested in.
Sure. Did you guys, the gun that was used, was that Lori's, Charles's, was it Alex's?
It was Alex's.
See, why the hell did he have a gun at the house? He wasn't even supposed to be at the house. We have a crime-free addendum lease, too. Like, I didn't know that someone with a record, like, that was completely
The media has some of this screwed up. He was legally and lawfully able to carry a firearm. His rights were the exact same as yours and mine. So, and we've actually gone through, we did that, you know, when this first happened. And confirmed that his rights, he had that assault case in Texas, but his rights had been restored and he was able to carry a firearm. So,
yeah. Well, we all know the history, you know, like whatever. Okay.
Is there any questions that you want me to answer for you if I can?
I think my wife you know, she was just kind of curious about if we were going to have the house blessed or do something with a priest at the house to kind of like just get the demons out of the house. She was like, where do we go? What do we do? And if I told her it's the front room, that makes sense that the board and like, you know, when you say the flooring was removed right by that area, because I remember seeing the baseboard.
Yep. Yeah. Well, the flooring was removed. So when you walk in the door and you were to make a right down the first hallway that walks into the side of the kitchen, it was yes. kind of right in that area is where, okay. where the flooring would have been removed at. And then obviously the trim piece was all across that room.
Okay. Now, is that where the body and there was blood there? Is that why it was removed? Or was there any damage?
Where the flooring was removed. And if you pay close attention, you might be able to see where it was, but it was kind of, you know, when you go in the front door and you make a right along that wall, it was right down right there.
Okay. Well, again, I've been, you know, during my Christmas break, I was like reading, trying to find information because it was really heavy, lots of information and updates every day. You just get like, as an outside person, you guys do this for a daily and a living. And for me, it was like, gosh, I just want to find out anything I can. But then I'm like, you just get so infatuated. Your life gets consumed by this. And I'm like, no, I'm done with it. I want to communicate to authorities, anything that they might need to know. And then I think the stuff is going to come to a head pretty soon. There's so much activity going on right now. There's so much, you know, but I think just the fact that I knew that the Vallow family knew and they had more information about what happened in that house and they were complete. They had a celebration of life for Charles, which I didn't know about. I didn't know that there was something in Louisiana for Charles. And, you know, I've been communicating with some of the family members because they appreciated the fact that I was defending Charles's person when those first reports about, oh, this guy comes to a gunfight with a bat beating up his wife and her brother. And I'm like, no, that's not how it happened. Charles does not. That's not Charles. He, like, no one would ever support the fact that he is a violent person. Like, so that bothered me for a long time. And what I could do, I was closer to Charles than I was to Lori. I liked Lori. I thought she was a great mom. Like a lot of people are saying, she was a great mom for a long time. And they did. I have 8 kids and 5 of them are adopted. And Charles and I were always having those conversations about adopting kids. Cause he did. JJ was adopted.
Yeah.
So we would always have those conversations about how it's going. Like, what's the challenges? What are you doing? But, and Lori was right in line with those as well. When we went to California or to Hawaii to see them, she was just very hospitable, you know? So I can't say that it's a long history. It's just been a couple of years. Like everyone else said, she's gone off the wagon. So,
yeah.
But,
as far as the religious views and stuff, it's just kind of way out there. I mean, without a doubt.
Yeah. Well, let me see how I can figure out if I can send the thread of the text messages of Lori and just, you know, get anything to you so that you have that for your record. But, you know, and then, you know, I don't know, the neighbors that are at the house, man, they had their eyes and ears peeled of events that were happening. And, you know, some of those comments are directly from them that, you know, Joe, why was there a pool party at the house? I'm like, what are you talking about? Yeah. So I
sent you an email and it has my name, my desk phone number, and then and my email address. So now you have my direct contact information in case you happen to have any questions or if anything comes out, you can just call me directly.
Got it. I did. I received your email here. Okay. Right. And as a homeowner, are we able to receive any other additional information on the report or the house, or is that all closed until this is all figured out and done? And
so I'll share with you, it is my opinion, and obviously with Alex's death, it's going to be harder to prove, but it's my opinion that they set Charles up for some sort of encounter. So I don't think it was, I haven't thought it that it was exactly as they say since this started. But it's a matter of us trying to prove it, and that's what we've been working on.
Understood.
So
yeah.
We are keeping this open, and if and when more information gets developed. I mean, I've been actively working this case with the FBI, with Gilbert PD, with The Pocatello FBI out of Idaho,
Idaho.
The two different agencies in Idaho. There's a sheriff's department, and then there's Rexburg, Idaho. So, I mean, on a daily basis, we're doing stuff with this case. So I'm keeping it open for now, in case I'm able to come up with criminal charges on Lori. So, but once that's closed, then you can request a copy of the report and get that.
So many interesting things there. It sort of just cuts off, but that is the end of that. But there was a lot. I mean, he is a big talker, but he gave a lot of information about Lori, and Charles kind of corroborated what Charles was saying, that Lori was normal up until a couple of years ago. And then obviously you got the spoiler alerts there about Tammy, JJ, Tylee, and Alex. And we definitely will go into all those deaths. Lot of stuff, guys. I am not kidding. This case, like I said, but I want to play one more thing for you before we wrap up this episode. And this is pretty huge. This is a big one. Chad Daybell, remember, we haven't talked much about him, but the belief system that Lori was following, this fringe LDS system, was Chad's. And Chad had basically crowned Lori the queen, right? But if you see Chad, he's not an attractive guy. He's very average, kind of frumpy. Lori's beautiful. She looks like a Barbie doll. I mean, she does. So Chad, being raised LDS, marrying Tammy, having this beautiful blonde bombshell give him this kind of attention, I mean, it clearly sent him into a tailspin of tailspins as well, to the point of just such devastation. I still go back and forth. I still go back and forth on who is the bad guy here, because they both are, but how did this all happen to get to this point? Chad Daybell makes a phone call to a funeral home in Chandler, Arizona, the same day Charles was killed. He uses a fake name, but it's not really fake because it's, you'll hear. Let me go ahead and play it.
Third ring answer.
Funeral home.
Hello, my name is I'm with their calls. How can I help you today?
We just had a death in the family, and we really don't want anything but a cremation and then to send the cremains to a family in Louisiana. Just a simple no. Nothing other than a cremation and sending him to his family for a service in Louisiana. So is there any way to know a ballpark price on that?
Yes. And I'm sorry for the loss.
Thank you.
Okay. Let me transfer you over to a director who can assist you with the pricing. What is your name, please?
It is Chad Daybell.
How do you spell the last name, please?
D-A-B-A-L, Daybell.
How are you related to the person who passed?
I'm his nephew.
And then also, this is for the Valley of the Suns in Chandler, correct?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, he lives there in Chandler. I live in Iowa, so I'm just trying to help out.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Yes, what is your uncle's name for reference, please?
He is John Daybell.
Your last name?
Well, D-A-B-A-L.
Okay.
His name. John. Uh-huh.
Do you have a middle name?
Myron.
M-Y-R-O-N?
Yeah.
And Chad, what is your phone number in case we get disconnected?
Yeah. This number, 515. I don't actually know my own number. let me look real good.
Thank you. Thank you. Is he at a nursing home, hospital, or residence?
Passed away in a hospital. I don't know the details. I'm just telling you.
Yeah, it's just for to know, because sometimes it's different if it's a residential or hospital or nursing home.
Thinking they're sending him to the medical examiner. I'm not sure. I should have had more information before I called. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Cremation with shipping. To which city?
New Orleans. hopefully here.
Okay, one moment, please, Chad, but stay on the line. Let me transfer you over to the director who can assist you with that.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Hello, Chad?
Yeah.
Thank you for holding. I do have the director, Clarissa, to further assist you.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm the senior director with Father Sister Marjorie Cemetery. I understand that your uncle passed away.
Yes, and I'm just starting the process for the family. He didn't have many relatives. I'm his nephew. I live in Iowa. But what
I'm
they
sorry
wanted
to hear
to
that.
It's, yeah, I had to see him go. Yeah, I think he's going to the medical examiner. I don't know all the details, but what the family basically wants is just to have him cremated there in Chandler and then shipped, have his cremains shipped to New Orleans, and
okay.
We'll develop the service later. So just trying to get a ballpark price.
Okay. So for a cremation, we are able to do our cremation for $1,695. Now, what that's going to include is the transportation into our care, the transportation to and from our crematory, our basic mm-hmm. professional fees, as well as our crematory fee. Now, there's going to be a couple other charges there for you. So we are going to have death certificates, which are $20 a piece with a processing fee, $15 permit fee,
mm-hmm.
and then we're able to do that transfer through the mail for you, and that's $150 fee for you.
Okay. UPS or something, I guess.
Okay.
So close, about a 2,000 probably, kind of a ballpark,
yeah.
Yeah.
Close to, yeah.
Okay. Well, that helps me a lot. I'm going to call one or two others, but I'll get back to you if we come that direction. Thank you so much.
Okay. You're welcome. If you need anything else, give me a call.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
So you might notice a couple things there. Chad lies about his last name. He says Dabal, D-A-B-A-L-L, I think. And his name is spelled Daybell, D-A-Y-B-L-L. He says it's for his uncle, but he's getting specifics of sending Charles' cremation remains to Louisiana, where Kay and Larry live. And he's checking prices because Lori is clearly probably going to have to pay for this, right? So it's really bizarre. And he also says it's his uncle, but he says he lives in Iowa and his uncle lives in Arizona. Chad does not live in Iowa. He lives in Idaho. So he was coming up with little weird lies during this whole conversation. Now, before I end, I just want to let you know, next time I am going to go over what happened when Lori found out that she was not the beneficiary on Charles's life insurance policy. $2 million life insurance policy, and Lori thought she was the beneficiary. And oh boy, S-H-I-T hits the F-A-N on that one. So I'm going to wrap this up for now. It was lengthy just because of the recordings. And I really appreciate you. And if you do enjoy this podcast, it would mean the world to me if you could rate it. Give it 5 stars if you believe it deserves 5 stars. I would really appreciate that. Leave a review or a comment. I feel like the only people that really leave reviews are the negative Nellies. So I'd love to get some more positive reviews written for me in there. I believe in the story. I think it needs to be told. But of course, we all have our own reasons for what we do. Tylee, JJ, Charles, Tammy, they all deserve to have the truth and the story told. If you don't mind, I'd really appreciate you leaving me a review if you're so inclined. Thank you so much for listening to Afterglow, Unveiling of the Idaho Cult. This is is Season 1, Episode 8, where Lori shows her true colors. Stay safe, stay well, bye-bye. Theme music by Dan Lebowitz. Sources, Justin Lum, Fox 10 Phoenix, and the great Nate Eaton, East Idaho News. So appreciate everything they've done to follow this case. They are just an amazing source. Thanks again, and if you want more, go ahead and check out my YouTube channel. Left Undone, Incomplete Investigations go all the way back to my first videos, and it's all about this case with footage and more than you ever would want. Take care. Bye-bye.